AM 1430 KBRK. Good morning, 9:29, and it's time now for our visit from Dr. Woody Franklin. Good morning.
Hi.
Thanks for dropping by.
Sure.
We were just talking during the song there about the flooding and how that's had a little bit of an impact on animals. You want to touch on that?
Well, obviously, people that live in lower-level apartments a lot of times got flooded out here this last week in Brookings, and we've had a couple that are staying at our house because where do we go?
You know, sure.
I think we were talking about what's in the floodwater. That's always a good topic.
Right.
But you get, especially if you get overflow of sewage treatment stuff, sanitary sewers that contaminate the rainwater, you can get all kinds of nasty bugs and bacteria and even viruses and fungal material and that stuff. And it's just real difficult sometimes to, you know, you go by and you see people with mattresses hanging out to dry. Gee whiz, what's that going to be like in 2 months?
Yeah, that's frustrating.
If you're in that situation, make sure everybody gets cleaned up inside and everything that you can clean. And pay particular attention to pets that might have been exposed to some of that water.
And you were saying it's not even that they might drink it, but just being exposed to it is not good.
Well, a lot of times, for example, cats have a real susceptibility to organophosphates, like weed killers, pesticides, that sort of thing. And if you get water that runs, you know, through your garage and down into your basement, and you've spilled something on the garage floor, you have that residue in there. And sometimes cats can walk through a place where the stuff has been spilled and get enough through their paws to make them sick.
Really?
So it pays to pay attention to what's there and what you can do and clean up the best you can.
Try and keep those animals safe.
Absolutely.
You know? All right. Well, let's get to our official list of questions for this week. First off, someone called in to ask, their cat is pregnant, but she's also overdue for her rabies shot. Can she still have the rabies shot while she's pregnant?
You can. The caution is you're supposed to use what's called a killed vaccine, which means that there aren't any modified live viral particles in that vaccine. It's a killed product. Everything that's in there is dead. You still make immunity to it, but there's no live virus that could contaminate or modified live virus that could contaminate the fetus. My own personal opinion about that is I think when they're pregnant, you want to stress them the least you can if you want the kittens. And a lot of times, you know, putting them in a car and having them scream for half an hour and crawl under the seat and pulling them out of under the seat by the tail is pretty stressful on them. And I think sometimes you're better to just forego it
and
wait till they've had them and then get them vaccinated. Rabies in South Dakota is down a little bit. This 2017, it was down from 2016. It's kind of interesting because most of the rabies virus that we have here is of skunk origin, and 26% of the skunks that were tested were positive. So on every 4 skunks you see, one's rabid, theoretically. Raccoon numbers are down. They're about 15%. But what's up by 60% is bats, rabies in bats. And everybody said, well, I don't know. Well, every once in a while you find a cat playing with a bat out in the cellar or wherever. And they say it only takes a hole the size of a quarter for a bat to get in your house. So you might be looking at as much as 30-35% of bats that are rabid that you can find. So aside from those things, if you have a cat that stays in the house, minimal exposure to that kind of stuff, it's probably safe to let her go until she's had these kittens. But on the other hand, that stuff is always out there. And, you know, if you live in a house that's maybe a larger, older house or subdivided or whatever it is, you can not uncommon to have a hole in the siding or wherever. And you wake up and go take a shower in the morning, there's a bat flopping around the bathtub. So it pays to keep them up on the rabies vaccine. Most rabies is in wild animals. You know, we've vaccinated in domestic animals for years and years. And that has created a fairly significant pool of immunity in those creatures. But the wild animals, and where it depends on where you go, some places they vaccinate wild animals by oral vaccine. Out in the West, particularly raccoons and foxes and coyotes, they inoculate chicken necks and drop them from airplanes.
Oh, really? Okay.
And that gives some immunity in these wild creatures. But they're the risk, and you should be protected from it if you have a pet.
Absolutely. So if you do have a pregnant cat and you're not going to do the rabies shot, keep that cat indoors.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Minimal contact with other cats, anybody outside, wild animals, raccoons, skunks, whatever.
And then as soon as she has the litter, get her vaccinated.
You bet.
All right. Next question we have, we're switching from cats to dogs here. How far back can you trim a dog's toenails? Person here wants to start doing it themselves, but they don't want the nails to get too short and bleed. So what's the advice?
Classic question. Keeps people up nights.
Really? Okay.
The easiest way I tell people is when you cut a dog's toenail, look at the surface that you've cut. And it should be a uniform gray or grayish white, the flat surface that you've cut. Cut off just a little more. A very small amount more, a very small amount more. First thing you know, in the center of that pale surface, there'll be a dark, like a bullseye, show up. That's the bottom of the quick. And if you go further than that, you're going to make them bleed, like your own fingernail. Mm. But if you stop when you see that very first black dot, you're okay. And of course, the question is, well, if I cut the toenail and make it bleed, is it going to bleed to death? General answer is no. And what you can do if you do that at home is you can stop that with flour, just whatever you bake with. You can use a wet tea bag that has tannic acid in it that kind of cauterizes those vessels. You can use cobwebs. Nobody admits to having cobwebs, but they do work.
Really?
Yeah.
You gather up some cobwebs, put it on the... Yeah. That actually works.
About.
How'd you learn that? That's an odd one.
Long years of experience.
Yeah.
That cobweb material is absolutely amazing. You know, they make reticles for sniper scopes with that stuff.
Really?
Yeah. It's theoretically a little more tensile strength than steel.
Huh.
It's really a curious material, but yeah, it works.
Is it kind of an old folk remedy then? For
It works.
Okay. That's crazy. All right. Next question. Listener says, we just got a German short-haired pointer, and we're told to do ear cropping and tail dock out the puppy, but they've also read online that's not necessarily good. What's your advice?
Well, as far as I know, a breed standard for German Shorthair does not require an ear crop. Tail, yeah, but again, it's only somebody's idea what the dog ought to look like. And when I do tails, I do them when they're 3 days old. So okay. If you've got an 8 or 10 or 12-week-old puppy, you're kind of getting out there. And for the sake of somebody's desire for cosmetic appearance, it always seems like a lot of aggravation to me. And I don't know anybody that still does ear cropping. When I was young, I worked in a place where a guy did it all the time. He did 20 or 30 of them a week. But the trouble I had with it is that these people always came back. Well, this is not the right shape, and that's too long. And that's too pointed, and it's not thin enough here. You know, always aggravation. And you have to use, or they did in those days, a foam aluminum splint. You had to tie the ears on the top of the dog, looked like you had a set of horns on, you know. Mm-hmm. And of course, the dog just raised Cain about it and didn't like it and tried to tear it off and was very successful a lot of the time. But in general, ear cropping and tail docking both are kind of high on the list for Humane Society protests. And there's a lot of that sentiment that's driving a loss of those two things. I guess if I had a 10 or 12-week-old puppy and he still had ears and tail, I'd let him be the way he is. Just my own opinion. If you want him to conform to some particular standard, it's fine. Have at it.
But there's not a health or medical reason for that.
No. The ears, I think they got used to do them between 12 and 14 weeks of age, if you want to do them. But you say, I don't know anybody that does them anymore. And they used to have forms, you know. It was like an aluminum block, and you'd clamp the ear down to it and run the knife around the edge so you get ideal shape. Sew it up, you know, bandage it up, put the thing on the head. But it just never seemed like it was worth doing to me.
No, that sounds like it's unpleasant for the dog, mm-hmm. And if you don't need it, why would you do that?
Yeah. Well, a lot of people that fight dogs like to take them off because then the other dogs can't get a hold of the ear or tear it off. And I had one last fall here. It wasn't a dog that was fighting it. It was just a coyote or something. It just tore the end of the ear right off. So it's a fairly normal behavior when they fight, you know, try to grab a hold of the ear and yank them around and so on. But I'd say in general, it's probably not worth the trouble.
No, it doesn't sound like it.
Mm-mm.
All right. Next question. Listener asks, are there any laboratory tests that should be performed on a senior dog in order to detect the early onset of some potential health issues?
Well, there's a sort of a sub thing that's grown up called Senior Wellness Program, and a lot of places have that. And it's based on the idea that as you get older, and generally the cutoff year is 8 years for a larger dog, as you get older, your kidneys don't work quite as well as they used to, your liver is maybe a little sluggish in its function, pancreas, maybe you've had some pancreatitis, so there's some, you know, pancreatitis going on, so your digestion efficiency is lesser, you may be at risk for diabetes. So not a bad idea to have a blood profile on a senior check for a dog and see where you are with all those things. And then you can get an idea about what's coming. So if my dog all of a sudden starts drinking a gallon and a half of water at a time, you get an idea from what you see in the blood. And it's not a bad idea. I'd encourage it if you have a dog that's older than 8 or 9 years old and you're concerned about, you know, ongoing health and wellness.
Does it vary from breed to breed, or is this good rule for any dog?
Well, the little dogs often live a lot longer than the big dogs.
Really?
If you ever see a Great Dane over 7 or 8, it's a real rarity. So if you have a Chihuahua, you know, he's not going to be what you'd call a senior dog until he's more like 10 or 11, something like that. But it's still the same principle. As you get old, you get wear and tear, you get, you know, silent infections and dysfunctions, and sometimes there's damage done to these organs, and it's good to know about. You get a baseline for where you are in case something comes up later.
Okay. Is that like a blood screening,
mm-hmm,
then?
Blood panel. The one we have is a 26-channel blood panel. It's blood electrolytes, enzymes, a lot of different things that you can make interpretations from.
So you get a really good look at what's, mm-hmm, going on.
Oh, yeah.
It's neat.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. Switching to cats now. Is there anything I can do, says a listener, to fix my cat's marking behavior, like urinating outside the litter box?
That's kind of a sticky subject.
Yeah, a little bit.
If you have a cat that is what they call marking, and the definition of that is territorial marking, the cat says, the space here is too small for me, I need more territory, so I'm going to mark what I have and look for more. Those cats will generally line up and squirt right straight back, and about 6 inches up the wall, you'll have urine spots. And if you want to know if that's what's going on, get an old black light, ultraviolet light, it'll show up. That's a behavioral thing. It's a territorial imperative. The cat doesn't feel like he has enough space to manipulate in, and that can be other pets, other cats, other dogs in the house, kids, the uncle that's come to dinner, stayed, whatever it is. You know, it's supposed to be a stress thing, and that's so vague that it can be anything. And it can be a change of house. It can be, I've got one right now where this woman moved into a place and the cat before him was squirting on a place in the carpet, and it's very difficult to get out once it's there, which is why you have such a high deposit for a pet if you have a pet and you rent an apartment.
Oh, okay.
But anyway, that's a behavioral thing. Then there's also a legitimate concern with an infection, because you could have a cystitis that makes the cat want to go. Generally, it's very small amounts, and it's in random places. It's not always in the same place. Or in the same area, even. It's just that they feel like they have to go, so they squat, bang, out comes a small amount of urine. And then the other thing that you have to consider is sometimes kitty boxes get too dirty for cats. They don't like them because they're not clean enough. And if you've got a cat that's going 2 inches to a foot from the edge of your present box, you got to be suspicious about, is the box clean enough for them? And some people have to scrub the box and dump the litter every day, or it's not clean enough. And I don't know why that happens. It generally happens in older life. It doesn't happen when they first start out. I had one once where a guy had about a 16-year-old cat, and he had the litter box downstairs, and the cat was going about 4 inches from the box. And he couldn't figure it out. And I said, well, do you have a light on in the cellar? And he said, no. So put a night light in and then put the litter box in there. And as soon as he got the light in there, the cat could see where the box was.
Oh, wow.
It had cataracts, you know, and it was a little visually impaired. So there's all kinds of fluky things like that, but those are kind of the top three.
Several things to start looking at.
Yeah, on the list.
16, that's got to be really old for a cat.
Getting up there.
Yeah. Now, the if it's territoriality, is that just male cats, or do females do it too?
Both,
they do?
Both have territorial. They have a territorial imperative. It's like sometimes when you have a bunch of cats, like on a farm or someplace, the female will be in charge. You know, there's an aggression there, and there's a sense of territoriality, and everybody runs when she comes around. It's worse in tomcats, obviously, because they're more jacked with hormones than ordinary neutered cats, but it's a real problem.
Okay, and that's when they start getting stressed and more of it comes out?
Yeah. More, like I say, more cats, more pets, more people, smaller space, whatever it is.
Wow, something to watch for.
Mm-hmm.
Next question. Continuing with cats, listener says they have a 9-year-old cat that's eating more than ever, but seems to be losing weight. How concerning is this?
Well, that'd be a cat that, at the very minimum, would be a candidate for urinalysis and probably a blood profile. I would suspect it's a diabetic cat.
Ooh.
Diabetes in cats is not uncommon. That's a pretty characteristic sign. Excessive absolute water consumption and generally tendency to lose weight. It could be a kidney dysfunction, too. That's why the panel is appropriate, because then you can find out, is it diabetes, is it kidneys, is it both, is it liver, is it something else?
Sure. If it is diabetes, what can you do for that in cats?
cats and dogs are not amenable to the oral insulin type things that people have, so you have to use an injectable.
Ooh.
Which is not it's difficult to do, and I admire people that do it, because number one, there's a fair cost involved. I think the cheapest jug of insulin you can get is about $25, and some of these cats are going through 2 to 3 jugs a month, and then you have to wait until the cat eats before you give it the insulin. And most people in the morning are rushing around trying to get to work, trying to get the kids to school, and they're not going to see whether the cat eats its breakfast so it can give it insulin. And it's just a difficult thing to do, but it can be done, and people do along, you know, they get along with it okay.
Really dedicated animal lovers
to
do that.
Yeah. Yep.
Okay. Next question, continuing with cats. A listener with a kitten says the kitten often needs things, needing a blanket, the couch, even the people.
Mm-hmm.
Why does she do this, and will she stop doing it as she grows older?
Well, you watch a little kitten on its mother when it's nursing and it's needing, and it associates the needing, I think, with being fed. So a lot of times this stuff is food-seeking behavior. You know, they're needing and they're thinking, well, if I do this, that's when I get fed, so I'll just keep doing this, maybe I'll get fed. The other thing is, in cats, particularly Siamese cats, there's a thing called wool chewing. And these cats will get a hold of a woolen sock or a woolen sweater, a woolen blanket, and they'll just chew it into a wet, slimy wad. And sometimes that kneading goes along with that wool chewing behavior. So if you have a cat that's not working over your wool socks or your wool sweater, probably it's just food-seeking behavior. And as a general rule, as they get older, they get away from it. It's not so prevalent, but it does still happen occasionally.
Nothing to really worry about, though?
No.
Okay. I suppose that would maybe be worse if the cat is not declawed. If it
could be.
Yeah. Could be. It kind of hurt if someone, they do that to a person.
Yeah.
But hopefully they'll outgrow that.
You bet.
All right. Next question. Is feeding a cat fresh salmon healthier than feeding her canned food?
Well, I think it's about the third time we've had this question, but I'll say it again. The fresh salmon is better in terms of the nutrients that are in it because it's not heat processed. Heat and heat processing is the enemy of nutrients, particularly vitamins. So from that aspect, the nutrients that you get from that fresh salmon are probably higher per gram of salmon than they are for either a salmon cat food or a canned salmon, both of which have been cooked. Now, the other thing you have to keep in mind is that there are, when you talk about nutrition, there are other trace minerals and vitamins that are supplemented in the canned food that are not in the raw salmon. So from a strictly nutritional sense, the canned salmon is not as good as a salmon cat food, because the salmon cat food has the added vitamins, trace minerals, and so on. I read a piece this week. I can't remember where I read it, but there's an increased incidence in myocardial failure, heart muscle failure, in some animals on grain-free diets. And they don't have enough data yet to know why or what they think is causing it or why it might happen. But there is an amino acid called taurine, and it is absolutely essential, which means it has to be provided by the diet. That is imperative for cardiac health, particularly in cats. And we saw this years ago before they started to add taurine to the food. These cats would just get stressed and the heart would just stop. They'd come in and put them on the table to be examined or vaccinated or whatever, and they'd drop over. Whoa. And it was the stress of the trip and all of that, which they didn't like, but it just overtaxed the ability of the myocardium to function. So whether that's involved or whether it isn't, I don't know, but it illustrates that there are other things besides the normal natural ingredients that you get in a whole product like whole salmon or fresh salmon that are necessary for animals to be properly nourished and healthy. And you have to keep that kind of thing in mind.
So I guess if you're going to do fresh salmon, that should be part of the cat's diet, not all of it.
I'd say that'd be a good plan.
Supplement it with something else.
Yep. And it goes to the same thing with people that want to make their own diet at home. You know, I had a guy that was feeding this dog a turkey leg, handful of hamburger, and a cup of cottage cheese every day, twice a day. And that's all.
Wow.
No vitamin supplementation, no trace mineral supplementation. And I just for fun, put down a regular thing of dog food, and it was just gone in a second. And I always think, you know, he's never been exposed to that regular dog food. There must be something in there that his body is telling him that he needs.
Yeah.
I figured just trace minerals and vitamins.
Sure. He knows he's craving something.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
Huh. That is interesting.
Well, it's one of those things you don't always, you know, think about, and it points to extra steps you have to take if you want to make a homemade diet. You have to be smart enough to know what kind of extra vitamins, what kind of extra trace minerals do I need, and so on and so forth.
Sure. I suppose just like with humans, they always say part of a complete breakfast.
So, yeah, right.
Make sure you get all of it.
Yeah.
All right. Last question we have. I bet this is a common one too. Listener says, if my pet gets sick, can I get sick too?
Absolutely. There's a whole study out there of a thing called zoonosis or zoonotic disease, and the list is as long as your arm. Heartworm. You know, if your dog has heartworm and the mosquito bites the dog and it bites you, it can inject the heartworm into you. Roundworms. You get roundworm eggs in your mouth, you can get worms. Hookworms can penetrate the soles of your feet. You read about these people that are going to these real beautiful Caribbean beaches and they're coming back with MRSA, hookworms, all this other crud, you know, just from walking in the sand along the beach. Birds are horrible. Influenza, tuberculosis, Japanese bee encephalitis, all kinds of nasty stuff. And leptospirosis is a kidney disease, primarily reproductive tract disease. You can get that from infected dog urine. So, yeah, the answer to the question is you can get sick, too, and it just depends on the disease. Toxoplasma, you know, toxoplasmosis in cats, it's an abortion agent in people. You get toxoplasma from a cat and you're pregnant, you can have a real high chance of aborting.
This is why they say pregnant women should not change the cat litter.
Absolutely, or dig in the dirt with bare hands, or eat raw meat.
Wow. Are there some things we can do around animals to keep ourselves safe?
Well, the big deal is sanitation. You know, you keep your hands clean and you keep your fingers out of your mouth. But if you're a little 2-year-old kid, that's kind of hard to do.
You bet.
So it takes a lot of oversight. Some of this stuff is treatable, but you have to know that the animal has it. You know, so I would say just as much sanitation as you can muster, bring it to bear.
You bet. Try and keep your animal healthy too, I suppose.
Absolutely.
All right. Well, anything else to add this week?
No, we're kind of out of the tick season. It's starting to be flea season, so keep a watch for those itchy dogs and scratchy creatures.
thought flea season kind of ran year-round.
Well, it depends. But as a general rule, we don't see it much until first part of July when the weather gets hot. Ticks are inhibited a little bit, then the fleas start to roar. But you're right, the fleas are an environmental problem. You get them in your house, you've got a real problem. You've got to deal with the problem in the house rather than the pet.
Otherwise, they linger.
No, they do. Terrible.
All right. Hey, thank you very much, thank you. Dr. Woody Franklin.
Yep. See you.
And if you have any questions for Dr. Franklin, he'll be back in a couple weeks. Give us a call, 692-1430, 692-14.